Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. It's a great pleasure to be here. My first time in Santa Barbara, and sorry, I seem to have brought the weather from the UK with me.
No, that's all right.
Okay, so today I'd like to talk about stars, black holes, and their connection to superconductors in the context of holography. Okay. This is based on these two recent papers, the first with my advisor, Mukund Rangamani, and Ben Withers, a brilliant postdoc at Durham, and also a second paper with Ben. Please ask questions whenever you feel like it. Okay. I'd like to start with a real-world problem. Okay, so a typical system of condensed matter has a finite temperature, a finite density, and may exhibit many different phases. Okay? Now, an example that's received a lot of recent attention are the unconventional superconductors. Okay? These are superconductors which do not follow standard BCS theory, and furthermore, even the normal phase is poorly understood. Okay. It's believed that these are inherently strongly coupled systems, and to make progress in these, a natural first step is to understand this phase diagram a little better. Okay. This is a tough call. We have a quantum field theory, finite temperature, finite density, and it's strongly coupled. Okay. We don't have many tools to deal with this sort of thing. Strangely enough, string theory can help us here and provide such a tool. Okay, the mantra is that if you have a difficult question in strongly coupled field theory, then you can map this to a well-defined problem in classical gravity. Okay. Now, in particular, for the system I just described, a system with finite temperature, finite density, then this should map to a black hole in anti-interstellar space with electric flux on the boundary in general. Okay. Now, in general, ADS-CFT tells us that we should map a static solution of gravity to a phase in the dual field theory. Okay? This allows us to map the question of understanding a phase diagram, understanding the possible phases in a system, to understanding the space of static solutions in a gravity theory. Okay? That's the problem that I'm concerned with today. Okay. What solutions to gravity could possibly be relevant to the cuprates, okay? Or to superconductors in general. These are the charged hairy black brains. Now, I know that a lot of work was done here in uncovering these, but just as a short review. How short? Okay, right. As a short review, okay, so it was shown by, well, the instability was first found by Gubser, and then Hartnell, Herzog, and Horowitz came along and constructed non-linearly solutions which were charged black holes with charged scalar hair. Okay? And indeed, they found that these solutions dominated the grand canonical ensemble. They were thermodynamically prepared over bald charged black holes. Okay? And the useful thing here is that this instability for the formation of charged scalar hair maps to spontaneous U1 symmetry breaking in the dual theory. Okay? Note when I say brains, so these are black holes with translationally invariant horizon, and they asymptote to planar ADS. Okay? This means that the dual field theory would be on flat space. Okay. Here's some typical plots for the condensate and the free energy of these systems. Okay? Below a certain temperature, there exist solutions which have charged scalar hair. Okay? The charged scalar hair, the bulk, the normalizable mode of the bulk scalar is proportional to the condensate in the dual field theory. And indeed, the charged hairy black brains are thermodynamically preferred over the bald brains. Okay? These solutions are the condensed phased, and these solutions are the normal phase. Right. This is just in a bottom-up model, okay? The simplest gravity model that will exhibit these kind of features. This has also been embedded in top-down examples. You can take a consistent truncation of supergravity, and you can look down to the same field content, just with different couplings, and you can find the same kind of features, both in 4D and 5D in the bulk. Okay. I'd like to go out on a limb here and say that I think it's probably we'd be very lucky to find the cuprates just sat there in string theory waiting for us. Okay, I think it's very unlikely that we'd stumble across this embedding in string theory. So I think it's more profitable, alternatively, to look for robust or generic features in the space of static solutions. Okay, so look for generic features, and see if any of these might be relevant. Okay, so this is the question that I'd like to answer. Okay, so unfortunately I won't have an answer today. Instead, I'm going to take two small bites out of this problem. So my first bite possibly seems unrelated at first. Okay, so I'd like to consider global solutions. Okay, so far I've been considering solutions which are planar, so they asymptote to planar ADS. Okay, and these are arguably of most relevance to condensed matter applications because the dual theory lives on flat space. Okay, but you can also consider solutions which asymptote to global ADS, in which the field theory would be on a sphere. Okay, so if you're happy to consider these type of solutions, a natural question to ask is, when can they become large? Okay, so when can a global solution be made into a planar solution? So a typical global solution that we might have here is something like a star. Okay, so people have constructed stars made of a radiation fluid in global ADS. And it turns out that generically, it's not possible to make this large. Okay, so it's actually a dimensional dependent statement for some unknown reason. In dimensions greater than 10, you can blow these up. Okay, this is just a curious feature of gravity that I don't think people understand.
When you say make it large, do you mean you want to make the energy very big, or do you want to make just some sort of radius of the star very large? Or?
Good question. Okay, so when I say I make it large, I mean that. So when can these solutions, the star would have a characteristic size, okay? So when can this size be made large with respect to the ADS length, okay? So somehow the object is reaching out to the boundary and you can perform a scaling limit and find a planar solution, okay? So that's the question I'm interested in. But instead of stars made of radiation fluid, I'd like to consider stars made of charged scalar. Okay.
What prevents the things from getting large in the cases where they can't be?
That's a very good question.
I mean, like the deep reason you said that is mysterious, but I mean the sort of immediate.
Well, okay, so if you just looked at the solutions, okay, so they're characterized by various asymptotic data. So you might have, I'll just draw quickly on the board. You might have. So the solution, so the star might have an ADM mass, okay, and you can plot the density of the radiation fluid at the core of the star against M against this, and you find behavior that looks something like this, okay. So the mass cannot be made arbitrarily large, okay. And I'll have more to say about this later, and this picture will become more precise later. I'll talk about it in some more detail.
Okay. You can think of it as more or less like a Schindler's Ecker then.
So it would not collapse.
Exactly.
Okay. So in this talk, one thing I'd like to discuss, okay, is a connection between the planar limit of these charged scalar stars and the zero temperature limit of the charged hairy black brains that came up on the previous slide. Okay. So that was my first bite. The second bite is to consider some highly non-generic features. Okay. So if you're working in consistent truncations of supergravity, the theories you have tend to have very few parameters. They kind of you somehow land on critical points in some sense with these theories. And they can display highly non-generic behavior. Okay, so here I'm considering three different truncations of the same supergravity theory. Okay, let me draw your attention to the first two. Okay, so in these two theories, you have the same field content. You have gravity. You have the metric, the Maxwell field, and also a charge scalar. Okay, And but the couplings between these, the couplings that you find in your action, are very different to the minimal couplings that I've demonstrated, that I showed before, in the bottom-up model. So this theory here gives you solutions that look just like the bottom-up model. Okay. But you can also find, so in this theory, solutions that look very different. Okay. So here, the charged hairy black brains exist above a certain temperature. Crucially, they have no zero temperature limit. And furthermore, these solutions are unpreferred. So the bold black hole, the normal phase, is preferred to these solutions. Okay. So very different behaviors possible. But also, the model that gives you this behavior is a subtruncation of this model. Okay. So when I say subtruncation, I mean, so this model on the far right will have more fields turned on. Okay. So you'd expect to see more complicated behavior. And you do, but it turns out that the fields that you had switched off before actually give you thermodynamically preferred solutions. Just for acknowledgement, this plot comes from a paper from Donald and Gordon. So the message here is that there are other thermodynamically relevant solutions that maybe you shouldn't have discarded. Okay, that you might need to consider. So my second bite of the big problem in this talk will be to study a much wider truncation and see if we can kind of get more information at once and try and learn some more general lessons. Okay. So here's my outline. Any questions so far? So first, charge scalar starts. Okay. So here's the theory I'll be considering for this first part of the talk. So it's an Einstein-Maxwell charge scalar theory. Okay. The solutions I'm interested in, these charge scalar stars. So what do I mean by this? I mean a solution that asymptotes to global ADS4, and they're everywhere regular. Okay, so there's no horizon, so they have no horizon, and they're everywhere regular. So they're regular at the core, most important. They have various other names. In our paper, we called them solitons, and in other papers, they've been called solitons. But you can also think of them as stars. They're regular, they're spherical. And also, they're gauge equivalent to charged boson stars, which have also appeared in the literature. So I'll probably switch between scalar stars and solitons at will, but they mean the same thing. I think solitons is often confusing because they're non-topological, so people often want them to be topological. They say if you give them a soliton that isn't, they get upset. Okay, so these are the stars of the show. So this theory has two parameters: it has scalar charge and the scalar mass. Okay, so I'm going to fix the mass to be this value. So this is the value that was taken to draw the first plots I showed you, okay? Two good things about this choice of mass. The first one, it gives you integer fall-offs at ADS, at the ADS boundary, and it also gives you a choice of choice of quantization, okay? So you can choose either of the fall-offs to be zero, which corresponds to working in standard or alternate quantization. Okay. The remaining parameter is Q. So we have Q. So Q will label, so the boundary theory interpretation of Q is that it's a different, you're working with a different theory. Okay. But in the bulk, it's a parameter we can tune and see if there's any kind of generic behavior. Okay. I'd like to point out that there's been a lot of related work done mostly in 5D. In particular, this last paper, with George, showed many similar results to the paper we found, but they had a much greater emphasis on black holes. I'll be talking about on global black holes. So that's the theory. So let me tell you a bit more about this planar limit. Okay, so one solution to this theory is global Schwarzschild ADS. Okay, so this is a one-parameter family of solutions. You can construct a dimensionless ratio out of the mass and also the boundary curvature. Okay. So we have a branch of solutions here. So the planar limit is the following scaling limit. Okay. So with these first two, it's just a coordinate transformation. But in the limit, you change the asymptotic structure completely. Okay. Now, if you just take this limit naively, as shown, then the solution you're left with is just vacuum planar ADS. Okay, so everything that was interesting about it, namely the black hole, has been thrown away. This is true unless you also move along this branch of solutions. So you also scale M appropriately, and you can see that the factors of lambda are going to drop out, and you'll be left with the planar Schwarzschild black brain. So the upshot here is that global solitons, okay, so they already have switched names, these charge scalar stars will have an interesting planar limit if you have branches of solution which have an unbounded asymptotic coefficient. So if instead we found something like this, then you'd claim that there was an interesting planar limit here. Okay. And furthermore, you might have other coefficients, so not just one, not just m. You might have other coefficients, so the data for the scalar and the gauge field. Okay. So all these have to grow fast enough to survive in the planar limit. Okay, so just briefly, this is what the solutions kind of look like. Here's the ansatz. It's a static spherical ansatz. Okay. And the boundary conditions that we want it to be asymptotically global essentially gives us this one. And also note here that this is what I meant by having a choice of four lofts. Okay, so we can find solutions setting either phi1 or phi2 equal to zero. Okay. More general boundary conditions are possible, but I won't talk about those in this talk. Okay, so we follow the standard procedure of integrating these numerically with the remaining boundary condition of regularity at the core using a shooting method. Okay. Note that this is very similar to how you'd approach the charged scalar hair black brains, okay? Except this would be replaced with the flat metric on R2 and this Wolmer discipline. Okay. But an important thing to take from this slide is that once you've specified Q, so this parameter in my theory, once you've specified Q, then you have one parameter branches of solution. Okay, so that was one of the things we needed for a planar limit. You need to have branches of solution. Okay. Right. So now I'm going to go to the board. So I'm just turning the lights off. Okay. And I'm going to end up drawing a very, very simple graph. Okay, so I'd like to demonstrate a few of these branches of solution that we found. Okay, so these solutions have their asymptotic data. One piece of this is the ADM mass. And also, you have the value of the scalar at the core. Okay, this is another piece of data that you supply. Okay, so going back to Alan's question from earlier. So what's your intuition for what would happen? So you'd imagine, okay, so you have this picture in your mind of global ADS as being some kind of covariant box, okay? So possibly you might think that if you increase the value of the scalar at the core sufficiently high, then you get a black hole. Things will collapse to a black hole, okay? So seeing as though we're not interested in black holes, we're interested in these charged scalar stars, then we might think that they would have a maximum mass. Okay, that's a rough intuition. But these scalar stars are charged. Okay. So you might think that if you ramp up the charge sufficiently high, then you'd find that you could always beat gravity somehow. This is kind of linear Newtonian thinking. But you might think that if the repulsion was sufficiently great, then you wouldn't have to collapse to form a black hole. Okay. So that's the intuition. And indeed, we initially found that this was true. Okay. So we found branches of solution that looked like this for Q less than some critical Q, okay, and also branches of solution which are unbounded from above for Q greater than QC. We have these two branches here. So this one, crucially, has unbounded asymptotic coefficients. And so you'd expect that if you go right to the end of this branch, you'd find, but this is what it means to take the planar limit. So this solution right at the end of this branch is the planar limit. Okay. Right. So what's this got to do with supernumbers? Okay. So the punchline here is that this planar limit, of these charged scalar stars, or these solitons, generically coincides with the zero temperature limit of the charged black brain solutions, the hairy black brain solutions. Okay. So to demonstrate that this is true, instead of having to go to an infinite point up here, you can compactify this all down and consider scaling invariant quantities. Okay. So if you imagine that mu, the boundary value of the gauge field, parameterizes the distance on the branch, okay, then you'd imagine that for very large mu, okay, then these scale invariant ratios would tend to constants, okay, as you go right to the end. Okay.
So I thought you were saying here that you were parameterizing this by saying the value of the scalar field at the core.
Okay, so you could.
It's also monotonic in mu, the asymptotic mu.
Okay, so you can draw, so I've only drawn kind of one pairing here. You can consider lots of different pairings and see all sorts of different plots. But you have one parameter that takes you along this branch, and you can, say you choose that to be mu. You can just choose that to be mu. So we have seven pieces of data and differential order six, so we have one parameter left, and we can choose that to be mu that takes us along the branch.
But it's a non-trivial fact that things are monotonic in mu, right? It's not obvious, for example, it's not obvious to me that you can fix mu, integrate A, and be sure and always get a regular origin.
Oh, definitely, yes. Yes.
But you're saying you can. Is that right, that for every mu, there is a regular star which gives you that mu?
How's the best way to answer this? So, so it's not.
The mu might be rescaled away if you rescale the electromagnetic field, and then what really matters is the charge transmitted, I guess.
But this whole Q is the charge of the scalar field.
Yes.
Right.
And you're saying that, as Gary was asking, so for each value of mu, you have a different solution.
Yes.
Okay. So, as Gary was pointing out, that's highly non-trivial because mu could have a similar dependence to m, for instance, and then for one value of mu, you would have several solutions. But you're saying that that does not happen. For one value of mu, you have only one solution. Is that it?
I think that must be true.
So mu, in that plot, phi c could be substituted by something like mu.
Yes.
And it would still wiggle like that.
So that's not true. So I think you'd see a spiral. I think you'd see a spiral there.
But
you'd see a spiral for this guy, but not for this guy. Okay. So
it, you could.
That answers
so
it.
So if Q is bigger than QC, you can take whatever you want to parameterize your curve.
I was confused. Yeah, this one is monotonic.
Yes,
that's an answer. Okay.
So it's not like the rotating boson size, for instance.
Yeah.
That never admit this limit.
Yeah. All right, cool. Is that okay? All right, thank you. Okay, so what we can do is plot these ratios against mu. So for very large mu, we expect them to go to constants, and they do. And these constants match the values. These dotted lines are the values that we'd extract for a very, very low temperature charged hairy black brain. Okay. So this is telling us that they do indeed coincide. Okay. Good. However, One thing you might be concerned about is regularity. So if you go right to the end of these branches, you've blown everything up, are they still regular? And it turns out that this question depends very, very sensitively on the scalar potential and the couplings in your problem. So we just had a simple mass term, negative mass squared. And as you go right, as you go further and further to the end of the branch, then the scalar, the profiles of the fields look more and more like they're becoming like a log. Okay, so this coincides very nicely with what you get if you do this problem directly for the zero temperature black grains. Okay, you find logs for this type of potential. However, if you chose a different potential, so like a W-shaped potential, then you'd find solutions which interpolate between the two vacua. Okay, and then these functions are regular. These solutions are regular. Okay. Right.
Excuse me. Sorry to bother you. But those solutions that interpolate between different vacua, they cannot be seen as the zero temperature limit of the Harry black holes, right? Mm-hmm. Again, but we know that it's impossible to have an extremal Harry black hole.
There's no horizon.
Regular. Right, but yeah. That's why I'm asking, can you still see those solutions that interpolate between different vacuums as the zero, the entropy limit of the Harry black holes or not? Because if they are the zero entropy limit, then you would claim that you have a smooth Harry black hole at zero temperature. And you know that that's not possible.
You can have those.
No, you can. It's a theorem by Harvey Riehl and James Lucchetti and Hari Kundari. You cannot have Harry black holes at zero temperature. They have to be seen.
Regular finite horizon size black holes. Is that a theorem?
Even planar. We don't know of any. It's impossible.
You're saying you don't reach it as you cool it down? Because that is a good solution, right? The
for any non-zero temperature,
yeah.
It's a good solution.
But
strictly speaking, at zero temperature, you'll find all these logs and stuff like that.
Wait, did you ever run my session group flow? Would you log that or not?
Well, these logs? I mean, the solution is singular. If you calculate the Kretschmann or something like that, it would work. Yeah.
There are randomization group flows where you go from one UV ADS to a slightly different
yes.
IR
yes.
ADS.
I completely agree. I'm fine with that.
And you can turn those on by turning on a scalar field.
No, I'm fine, but I don't think you can see those as you cannot get to those solutions by decreasing the temperature of a Harry black hole.
But you can get so for systems that have that potential, we studied them, and you can find you find just this. You find this kind of coincidence.
I'm fine, but yeah.
That's the top line.
The top line, the zero temperature limit of charged Harry black grains coincides generically the planar limit of charge, scalar as immobile ADS. I don't think that's true in those cases.
What?
There will be planar solitons that are not the zero entropy limit of charged Harry black grains. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so this. Maybe this statement needs some refinement. So I'd say that whenever a zero temperature limit exists, then if you take that limit, then it, and you take this limit, then they appear to coincide. For the asymptotic charges agree.
We can discuss this
afterwards. Are you sure? I don't see that this is in conflict with what you just said.
So long as the solution is not regular in the planar limit.
Oh, so it's regularity that you...
It's regularity. Right. You cannot have a regular solution and being the zero temperature limit of a Harry black hole. That's impossible. Unless you evaluate some other thing.
What were the conditions of the theorem?
These things all make this condition. You can have translation. You can have... basically, it only needs to admit a certain near horizon geometry.
It also requires some positivity conditions on the
No. So it's just you integrate the differential equation and you look for regular.
Do you know the planar limit here is going to be scalar?
Yes. So
they could still coincide, just that it wasn't.
Yeah.
Right. Whenever. Yeah. Right.
The word regular doesn't appear in the first line, I suppose. The word regular isn't up here, I suppose.
But
yeah.
we should
discuss it later.
Yeah,
so it's interesting. Sure. Okay. Right, okay, so this is the story for Q greater than QC. Okay. Okay, so now step back a bit and look at these black brains again. So if you study the black brains, then you don't see any kind of feature at QC. There's no special Q. Okay. So that means that there's something else that provides the zero temperature limit that we haven't spotted. Okay. This led us to find a whole new host of new solutions. So here's the whole family of solutions. So I've just drawn this diagram here and filled it and added a few more branches. Okay. Many few more branches. Okay. So it's color-coded by Q. Okay. So here, for Q less than QC, this red branch here is just like the branch I drew here. Okay, so this has no planar limit. However, it has a counterpart at the same value of Q, which does have a planar limit. Okay, so this is the data can be made arbitrarily large. Okay. And also, so this is the branch for Q equals Q, or Q as close to QC as we can get. Okay. And here, this is a branch for Q greater than QC, and this also has a counterpart over here. So these solutions over here are very strange. They have no planar limit at all. And if you take Q sufficiently high, you get bubbles. You get these little closed loops in solution space, which we have no understanding for. This is kind of this is just telling us that our intuition for gravity is breaking down. Okay. So when things become nonlinear, you can find all sorts of very strange things. Okay. But the take-home message is that we found a planar limit for any value of Q. Okay, so this is somehow justifying the use of the word generic on the previous slide. Okay.
Does the radial profile have sort of nodes or something? Is that a thing?
Okay, so good question. So we restricted to zero node solutions from the start.
In all cases,
yes. So these are. So from a purely gravitational point of view, these extra solutions up here are very strange. But they provide the planar limit. Okay, so that's what we found in this model. Very briefly, we studied a few other models that arose from consistent truncations of supergravity. And the message here is that things depend quite strongly on the potential, as we said before. So the truncation that I labeled 1 back at the start has a potential that is indeed W-shaped. And the planar limit, the story is very similar to the picture I just showed, okay? Except we don't have a Q to tune. We only get, we only have one or two curves. Okay. But also, remember the other truncation that I mentioned at the start, this was a truncation that contains solutions which have no zero temperature limit. Okay, so if you find a solution with a planar limit in those cases, what does it match up to? Well, it doesn't match up to anything. It's a very strange thing. It turns out to be neutral. Okay, so even though in this theory you have supersymmetric solutions, okay, when you take this planar limit, they're still supersymmetric, but the mass and charge have both gone to zero, and you're left with just a very strange and highly singular object. Okay, so that's the end of the first part. Any more questions on that so far?
So I guess I was under the impression that these solutions could be characterized, you could specify the scalar field at the origin,
yep,
regularity of the metric, and just integrate out from that. But you're getting several solutions for the same value of the scalar field at the origin. So
yes,
you're
seeing
something
yes,
else.
Hold on. Which block?
The block that had all those branches.
Yes, okay. Yes, right. Yes, so we're tuning Q.
No, but we want a fixed Q, right? For a fixed Q,
yes,
have two solutions.
Okay, yes. Fixed Q, yes, we have two solutions for a given phi c.
So what's different about them in a neighborhood of the origin, for example? What do you...
Yes. All the other asymptotic data are different.
I'm obviously not remembering this right, but I thought if you just, these are all spherically symmetric.
Yes.
And so I thought the equations were determined. Like, I mean, the scale
of them, they're not.
Maybe it's because they're not. It's not like.
But you have to do something to get the normalized building.
Yes.
Yeah, you must have two choices for that. This is an example of what it is, about one elliptic equation having two solutions, given the same boundary data. Here is a very good example of such a thing. Within the same topology. This is even more weird than black ring. Within the same topology, there is not uniqueness for the same thing.
Does the scalar field oscillate a few more times?
No.
Yeah, it's true.
No, but there's simple term models where one has, let's say, two string solutions that are suspended from the same boundary points that are accelerated. And one is unstable, the other one is not.
Right. So that's something I have to. Yeah. Which one dominates the ensemble?
So the microeconomical ensemble.
Well, the macroeconomical, then it's obvious.
Yeah.
Well, no, sorry, it's not obvious.
So,
which one has lower free energy? I guess that's my question.
These are all zero entropy, so the energy is the free energy.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Very good. Right, okay, so now change tack, second byte. I'm going to look for new phases in a wider truncation. Okay, so this is still in the story of understanding the space of solutions. Okay. So here, I considered a very different theory. Okay. So this is a consistent truncation of supergravity that has many more fields. Okay. So there's a metric, 15 gauge fields and 20 scalars. We thought one or two just wasn't enough. Okay. So, but these can be packaged quite nicely. So you can package these fields into matrices. And I should point out that various subtruncations of this model have been considered before. So this means that we have some way of checking some of our results. The idea is to take a much bigger truncation and see if we can learn some general lessons. Right. So first let me tell you about the normal phase. So this is more complicated than the normal phase that we had before. It's a three-charge family of asymptotically ADS5 black brains. So these are the STU brains. Okay. So these have the charged black brains, and they have neutral scalar hair. And they're characterized by three charge parameters, these Qs, QIs. So I goes from 1 to 3. Okay. So this background is block diagonal. So I had these matrices describing my scalars and my gauge fields, okay, and these block diagonals. Okay. So that's the normal phase. And what I'd like to do is tell you a little bit more about the normal phase, because it's a bit more complicated than we've seen before. Okay. So here, if you take all of these QIs to be equal, then you recover the Reiser-Nordström black brain, okay, which we know and love. But for generic Q, they're different. Okay. So what I'd like to do is work in the ground canonical ensemble. Okay. So at a fixed ground canonical coordinate, so a fixed temperature and fixed values of the chemical potentials, we have up to four branches of solution. So if you fix those, then in general the chemical potentials are functions of all the different Qs. Okay. So we have four branches. Right. So it's known that it's been known for a long time that not all members in this family of solutions are thermodynamically stable. Okay. And we should really be considering perturbations about the dominant thermodynamically stable branch. Okay. So the condition for local thermodynamic stability is that you're at a minimum of this potential, of the ground canonical potential, which you can recast in terms of this Hessian. Okay. So I plotted some examples here of the normalized free energy versus a normalized temperature. Okay. So four different branches. Okay. So this is for a generic choice of the chemical potentials. So you just choose any arbitrary chemical potentials, all different. And you find that there are these different branches. And the blue ones are thermodynamically unstable by this condition. And the red one, so this one is the only stable one, and it has the lowest free energy, so it's dominant. Okay, that was a generic case of the chemical potentials. You could also consider equal chemical potentials. So for equal chemical potentials, one of the branches has equal charges, but the others don't. Okay. So this is the equal charge branch, And it turns out that it's, whilst it's thermodynamically stable and dominant above some temperature, it turns out that the equal charge black hole is actually this blue one, the blue branch at the top. So below a certain temperature, the Reisner-Nordström black brain is thermodynamically unstable and subdominant. Okay. So this is, it didn't take very long to show this, okay? But this is, even for the normal phase, in these bigger truncations, the solutions you're used to using can be unstable and subdominant, okay, when considered in this bigger picture.
Okay. I'm sorry, but this is not surprising. This is what happens in the simple models, right? So Nordström becomes unstable at low temperature.
To the formation of charge scalar hair.
Yeah. This is without the scalar.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, maybe I didn't make that clear. This is just looking at the background. This is just the background.
But you have neutral scalars.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
But these are coupled to the source.
But not charged yet. Okay. So now we want to consider fluctuations about these backgrounds. Okay. So I don't know, maybe this, it's not actually too hard. So the background is block diagonal, so fluctuations in the different blocks don't talk to each other. Okay. And we've imposed restrictions such that to make our life easier. And we're also, so what we're looking for are marginal modes that indicate new branches of these charged hairy black brains. Okay. So these are solutions which are time independent, and normalizable infinity, regular at the horizon, that sort of thing. Okay, so it's the usual story of considering these fluctuations. We're most interested in the off-diagonal modes. Okay, so the diagonal modes have been considered in truncations before, in simpler truncations. We have a wider truncation now. We have more modes to turn on. So we're interested in what they look like. Okay. Right, so here is a slice of the solutions at two chemical potentials equal, and the other one we vary. Okay, so P1 is a function of the ratio mu1 over mu3. Okay, and this is the critical temperature at which these marginal modes exist. Okay, so this blue region here is that minimum temperature, is the surface of the minimum temperature. Those vertical dashed lines that I showed before here. Okay, plotted as a function of mu. And we find that for any mu that we choose, we always find a marginal mode. Okay, so these, if the legs have the same value, then they're diagonal, or if the different values, they're off diagonal. Okay. So here's a, that's just a snapshot of the modes we see. Go.
Just one question. This is the off diagonal fluctuations.
Yes.
You can plot them there, the diagonal fluctuations. You know how.
So this is a diagonal one.
Perfect.
With legs equal, there's a diagonal. These are off diagonal. Okay. I appreciate I flashed this up quite quickly. So the general message is just as follows. So we can do a full scan for all chemical potentials, and we always find a marginal mode. Okay. It always exists above this minimum temperature surface. So in the phase, in the region of the normal phase, which is thermodynamically stable. But perhaps unfortunately, we find that the off-diagonal modes always have lower critical temperatures than the diagonal modes. Okay, apart from when the chemical potentials are equal. So let me show you an example of that. So these ones, these off-diagonal ones, these are always below these diagonal ones here. But the critical temperature, they all coincide, and this is the point where mu1 equals mu3 equals mu2. Okay. So possibly this is a bad thing, but this is exactly what we've seen in those truncations I showed you in 4D earlier on. Okay. So the truncation 2 was kind of like the equal charge truncation, which only has these diagonal modes. And what we've done is we've turned on modes which are like truncation 3, okay, which has more modes turned on. Okay, so I'd expect to find new preferred phases. And very quickly, I've only talked about the charge modes, okay? But you also have this matrix chi also contains neutral modes as well. So the neutral modes, we've found marginal modes for those, but we can interpret these as zero modes moving us around in the space of backgrounds. Okay, so this is, and you can construct them analytically just by perturbing the charges. So this is very similar. This has a very similar flavor to, well, it's the same as the groups of Mitra instability. We'd expect to see, if we turned on time dependence, we'd expect to see that these were, we'd expect to see a groups of Mitra-like instability. Okay. And therefore, more competing phases in this wire shrinkage. Okay. Right, okay, so now I've reached the end. So to summarize, kind of a provocative first point there. I've shown that there's this generic coincidence between the planar limit of these stars and the zero temperature limit of the black brains. Okay, this is a generic coincidence in the space of solutions. Okay, I've also shown that there are some lessons to be learned in wire truncations. Okay. So the short-term goals for this first one, we'd like to explore the stability of these stars and consider more general field content. Okay, so if we know that in a wider truncation, neutral scalars might be important, maybe we should consider solitons, which also have neutral hair. Okay. But also in these wider truncations, the question remains open to explore all these new branches we've found. Okay, construct them nonlinearly and look at the interplay between these different phases. But as far as the bigger picture goes, the big open question that I took two small bites out of, that's definitely very much an open question still. Other types of instability are possible, but furthermore, I've said many times that modes outside the truncation can also be important. So the question here is kind of where do you stop with this? Should you include all the KK modes? To have any hope of understanding which is the preferred phase, the real ground state, which I think is a huge problem, and I'd love there to be another way of doing it. So I'd love there to be some kind of organizing principle behind it all. Okay. Thank you very much.
So more questions for Sarah?
You mentioned that the off-diagonal modes indicated an instability at a lower TC.
Yes, right? That's what we found. That's our
result. But why is that a problem? Because if you start, I mean, if this is a superconducting type, these are charged modes. So
yes.
If this is a superconducting type instability, you normally start at high temperature, lower it, and the highest TC is the one that dominates, right? Because then you start going off in a new branch associated with the highest TC instability, and then the lower TC instabilities aren't physical.
Yes. Okay, so yeah, so I said, so the off-diagonal ones have the lower TC.
Right.
Okay, and they're the ones that are outside truncations considered before.
Yes.
So it would have been possibly more exciting if we'd found that the modes outside the truncations considered before had higher temperatures, and so should be considered first.
Oh, I see. So it's bad news only because it's not as exciting a result as if it had been the other way around.
Yes, yes. But because there are...
In terms of hoping for the simplest possible models to work, then it's good news, right?
Yes, I suppose so, yes. But going back to these different truncations here. So here, this TC there, where you have only one charge scalar, is the same as this TC here. So this, you should really have a blue branch kind of sprouting off here.
Yeah, I see.
So even though the critical temperatures are the same, the theory which has the wider theory has the thermodynamically preferred phases.
Right. Okay.
So that's why it's still a cause for hope, I suppose.
But also there's an additional issue, right? There can be first order thickness.
Yes.
So even though you have a DC that is higher, the other branch, I find it highly unlikely, but maybe the other branch would start being subdominant, but eventually cross.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happens here. There's a first order phase transition here.
Yeah, awesome.
These things are possible when you have, which are even scarier, when you have like wider truncations, this is possible as well.
That's interesting. With the combination of O1 and O3, you could have a dome.
I wouldn't be surprised to see that somewhere.
Maybe it places 10 to 7 to 0 temperature pretty strongly.
I bet you can make a dome in the K space or something like that.
Oh, yes.
Any other questions? Okay, so let's take Simon again.